Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yes, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And indeed, Sunbury Motors, well, selling vehicles online. How about that? Great news there. In fact, you can visit sunburymotors.com to see their entire Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, and pre-owned inventory. Select the perfect vehicle for you, and you can purchase it right online from the comfort of your own home. At sunburymotors.com. Great to have you with us on the show today. We're going to hear from Phil Troutwein, Penn State's new offensive line coach. We'll do that in the 3:35 half hour. Dieter Kurtenbach will join us from San Francisco at 4:06 today. We'll talk a little bit about the NBA and a little bit about the Jordan documentary. What I found fascinating about the Jordan documentary is that there's stories coming out about the Jordan documentary as if it's in real time. I look at ESPN.com. Oh, Isaiah is surprised that he's characterized as like it's a real-time thing. What, are you surprised that Jordan's not enamored with you? You know what's interesting about this documentary so far, Matt? Is through four parts, I've really enjoyed it. I found it fascinating, and I've learned nothing new.
I would say I've actually learned some stuff because I didn't watch a lot of these. Like, I really enjoyed episode four with the Pistons and Bulls going back and forth. But I can see why you didn't learn anything new.
I've learned nothing in it so far. And I expect someone your age to learn a lot about it because you're too young for this. Okay? I mean, you wouldn't have been alive when the Pistons and Bulls played, right?
Right. This was before my time.
Yeah. I mean, look, and I said it the other day, the Pistons would have won a single title in today's NBA. Zero. Why? Just look at the tape. Yeah. All those are fouls. Yeah, today's NBA doesn't put up with that. They're all fouls.
That's probably the biggest thing I've taken away, Steve, so far, is the NBA then and the NBA now, in a span of over nearly three decades, it's amazing how much it's changed.
Yeah. Well, it's changed for the better. Basketball, it needs to be a pass, flow, shoot, pass, shoot, kind of league. That's the way it's supposed to be. Now, you have to defend it, but you can't defend it by clotheslining a guy.
I actually found that entertaining, but I think it would get old after a while. So I see your point.
It got old after a while. After you're like, anytime you got within 10 feet of the basket, and they were not just doing that to Jordan. They did it to Bird. They tried to do it to Magic. The whole, it was like, okay. Like, no offense, but I realize those guys are better than your guys. It's not like they weren't a good team. Vinny Johnson was a fabulous shooter. I thought Joe Dumars was just a great player. That's a winning player right there. Isaiah obviously was a terrific player. John Sally was really good. Rick Mahorn understood his role. Rodman understood his role. Lambeer did as well. The Pistons were a good, rock-solid basketball team, but their style of play today would win them nothing. Okay, so let's get to name, image, and likeness. As expected, the NCAA Board of Governors gave its stamp of approval to continue the process. And they have to have, their goal is to have some semblance of rules in place to be voted upon in January. They'd like to have the semblance of rules in place for everyone to consider by October 31st, and then the vote would take place in January. I'm going to start out with this because Andy Staples wrote this in The Athletic. And then I'm going to get to some of the specifics of the rules here or what they're looking at. And this goes back to 2014. And I talked about this specifically on the show that day. It was during the Ed O'Bannon trial, O'Bannon versus the NCAA. And if you recall, Matt, I said that Mark Emmert got on the witness stand for the NCAA, and by the time he was done, he handed everything to Ed O'Bannon on a silver platter. It had to be one of the worst days of testimony ever. Here's the key. Get up there and tell them where the money goes. Don't be shy about it. Say, the money comes in from this so you can have men swimming. The money comes in from this so you can have women's gymnastics. The money comes in from that so you can have softball. The money comes in from this entity so you can have baseball. Explain it. No. Of course he wouldn't do that. Mark Emmert sat in the courtroom, and this is from Andy Staples' article, that the NCAA was protecting athletes from getting exploited with rules that kept them from getting paid for the use of their name, image, and likeness. The judge of the trial was Judge Claudia Wilkin. She actually interrupts the cross-examination of the by the plaintiff's legal team, because she had questions, and she was especially curious as to why Mark Emmert and the various entities were trying to uphold the status quo and why they felt the need to protect anyone from those who would wish to hand them money for doing something that isn't prohibited by the law. Okay? All right? That's her question. This is his answer. There is no shortage of commercial pressures to utilize student-athletes in promoting commercial products in a variety of ways. And one has to make sure that, in an amateur context, that it doesn't go to a place where the student-athletes are, in fact, being used as nothing more than shills for a product. Not the best answer. I believe I go back to my original statement. By the time he was done, I think the O'Bannon people here looked at each other and go, we don't need to call any more witnesses. We're done. We're good. So let's get into loosely what all of this means. Number one, it's going to put a lot of pressure on compliance departments in athletic departments. It will do that. There's just no getting around it. I mean, they're going to have to really take a long, hard look at all of these elements. Now, the rules are not hard and fast or in place yet, which is critical here. Let's see. And our good friends at CBSSports.com did a great job of really bullet-pointing this. So we'll take it directly from there. So how could athletes be paid? Number one, third-party endorsements, such as promoting a product or a service on television, radio, or advertisements. Number two, social media influencing. They could model it or promote a product or a service in exchange for samples or compensation. They could do it through Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, something I've never heard of, TikTok, whatever it may be. They could do their own work product or business activities. If they wanted to do something with their own digital media creation, podcasts, YouTube videos, streaming, things like that, they could do that, which a lot of athletes are capable of doing. Personal promotions, one of the obvious ones. Going to a business to do an autograph signing or a meet and greet. They can be paid for that. And there is no cap on endorsement earnings for athletes. So there's no cap. But there are restrictions. Athletes or third parties cannot use the intellectual property of a school or a conference in endorsements. That's Mr. Ham calling, by the way. If you're wondering what that noise is, I'll call him back in the next half hour. So in other words, you can get up there and say, "Hi, I'm Matt Catrillo, Penn State quarterback." But in the course of the advertisement, he cannot be wearing any Penn State garb. There can't be any logos for Penn State. There can't be any Big Ten logos or anything like that. So in other words, the intellectual property of the schools, which are trademarked and registered anyway, can't be used by the student athlete in the advertisement. You can say, "Hi, I'm Matt Catrillo, Penn State quarterback." Making you happy right now, aren't I?
Yes, very much so.
Okay. Now, schools or conferences cannot make endorsement payments themselves, so they're out of that part. And the schools or conferences cannot facilitate or help the athletes locate and arrange endorsements. So, in other words, you can't sit there and say, "Hey, by the way, come here, we'll set up an arrangement with this restaurant." Okay? So the school or the conference can't do that either. And schools cannot use or allow boosters to use endorsements as a means for paying for enrollment or participation in athletics. That's going to be the tricky one. Just remember the great philosopher Jerry Tarkanian. The NCAA is so mad at Kentucky, they put Wichita State on probation. One of the great quotes of all time. There are guardrails and regulations. Okay, endorsement is a genuine payment for use of name, image, and likeness, not a disguised form to pay for play. And it can't be used as an inducement in recruiting. Okay, now we're in the tricky area. All right. Endorsements is for genuine use of name, image, and likeness, independent of athletic participation or performance, rather than payment for participation or performance. Athletes cannot request to be compensated for name, image, and likeness in situations in which they have no legal right to demand it. Okay, now there's going to be a regulation of third parties. And who are those third parties? Marketing agents, financial advisors. I think they'd like to put together who's reputable and who's not, who's approved and who's not. And I think that's fair, because I think in putting together who's approved and who's not, I think it helps out young people. And it's already done already with agents being approved anyway. Potentially attempting to determine fair market value from endorsements in order to ensure they meet within the outline regulations. Right now, this is what you can't do. Okay? You cannot, as a student athlete, you would not be allowed to do anything for alcohol. I am Macatrillo for Budweiser. Can't do it. Can't do it for tobacco products, right? Which includes, obviously, chew. And nothing for sports gambling. You were also limited of third-party endorsements. Athletic shoe and apparel companies. Okay? That's a big one. Potentially making changes to acceptable pre-enrollment activities for athletes and potentially ensuring any endorsements do not interfere with the NCAA's efforts toward diversity, inclusion, or gender equity. Here's the other part. For all of you who think EA Sports, it's in the game, is now back in business, how wrong you are. Because that doesn't include this. Doesn't include it. That's complicated. Because they're saying that in order to do something like that, or when it comes to the apparel part, you essentially would have to negotiate with a players union to do that. Well, there isn't a players union. Because, I mean, I'm telling you right now, they have released this thing today. I guess over at GameStop, Suit Light was there looking to buy the game, and they're like, no. Yeah. First of all, put on a mask. It's a lot of levels that, you know, in excitement they didn't understand. Great to have you with us on the show today. That's just the starter. Phil Troutwine. We'll hear from him and his teleconference in just a few minutes. Tell you about the offensive line and what he thinks. He'll really go through player by player with you. And then Dieter Kurtenbach at 4:06. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Visit sunburymotors.com to see their entire Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, and pre-owned inventory. Select your perfect vehicle and purchase online from at home.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Visit sunburymotors.com to see their entire Ford, Lincoln, Kia, Hyundai, and pre-owned inventory. Select your perfect vehicle and then purchase it online right from the comfort of your own home. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and sunburymotors.com. Dieter Kurtenbach coming up next half hour. Phil Troutwine is Penn State's new offensive line coach. When you look at his history, he was always a talented player, but he always had to work for everything he had. He had to work to get himself into that starting lineup at Florida. He had to work to be in the NFL for as long as he was. He just had to. He wasn't the star, but he ended up being good enough, and he worked every step of the way. And fundamentals meant everything to him as to his ability to get where he was as a player. And that's something any player immediately gravitates toward. And what's really helped him to this point is that guys like Michael Menon and Will Fries, two of the older players on that offensive line, have bought in. And that's a big plus for any new coach coming in. When you can get the veterans, the acknowledged leaders, to buy into what you're doing. That tells you about Michael, it tells you about Will, but it also tells you about Phil. And he had an opportunity to talk with the media yesterday, starting with Rich Scarcella from the Reading Eagle.
Can you had said, I guess back in February, you talked about the receivers, but who do you think can step up behind Jahan among your group? And secondly, I want to ask you about a local kid.
And our apologies there. Had that one all set up the wrong way. That one is my fault. You know, now I could easily sit here and blame Matt, you know, because that's the easy thing to do. I mean, I could blame Matt.
Usually, yep.
Yeah, and I'd be absolutely right. No, I'm just kidding. Okay, how about let's try this one instead?
All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. When I call on your name, I'll unmute you, and then you could ask your question for Coach. So let's start with Mark Brennan with Fight On State.
Thank you, Greg. And Phil, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, what could you tell us about what you saw from Rashid Walker on film last year, and what do you see as kind of his upside as a young guy who's already played a lot of football?
Yeah, he's athletic. He has great feet. He's strong. He has a great punch when he uses it, and you could tell that he's nasty. He tries to finish his blocks. For a young talent, I'm excited to get him when he's young and mold him, into what he feels like he's gonna be. And I know his goals, and I'm gonna do everything I can to get to his goals. So he's a he's a really good player that I'm excited to get my hands on and coach.
Next up is John Petitschnock, HappyValley.com.
Hey, good morning, Phil. Appreciate the time, and hope you and your family are doing well.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, when you were hired, in addition to your coaching talent, James talked about it being a draw that you're from the region, and when that happens, the likelihood of stability increases. So along those lines, what does it mean to return to the region where you grew up, and is Penn State a place where you can see yourself staying for, maybe 5 years or longer?
Yeah, for me, this was a dream for me when, I was hoping to play here. But now I have an opportunity to coach here. I'm from South Jersey. Penn State growing up was Penn State. Everyone talked about it like it was the school to go to. So to coach here, it's a dream for me. I'm buying a house here. I see myself staying here as long as I can and long as, everything goes as planned. But, I love it here. This was special, and this is a goal, and this is where I could see myself being for a very long time.
Coach, I think I'm up. I think Greg has himself muted, but good morning. Caden Wallace, what makes him an ideal tackle for the future, and just how close is he to that starting competition there at right tackle or any spot along your offensive line?
Yeah, I think for him, he's versatile. I think he can play tackle. And then I also think he can play guard. He's massive. He's like 330, 335. Has really good feet. He's learning the game of football. His football IQ is getting better. Just being able to do the meetings I've done with these guys. He's a guy that's definitely bought in and wants to understand every position, because I think he understands the value of that, and I think he has the ability to play anywhere on the offensive line. He's battling right now for a right tackle spot, and also he can be my sixth guy or a guy that I plug in at guard and tackle, because I want guys that play everything, and he's one of those guys that I can see play anywhere on the offensive line.
Next up is Rich Scarcella, Reading Eagle.
Good morning, Phil. Thanks for your time. Phil, in general, how difficult is it for a fourth-year offensive lineman or lineman to adjust to a new position, Coach? And a follow-up, what have you seen, now that you've had a little bit more time, what have you seen from Michael Mennett on film, and what kind of leadership has he shown?
You know, he's an awesome. He's definitely, him and Fries are the two leaders in the O-line room. Just because they have the experience and guys look up to him because they've played that, they played for a long time. For Menin, he's bought in. You know, from day one, he's been talking with me about technique. He's been, you know, trying to ask me things and what can I do and how can I get better. And you know, he's been, you know, leading extra groups, extra meetings with the offensive line. He's a guy that, you know, it's my third time going over the offense and installing it, and he's starting all over, writing all the notes. And I think guys are looking at that, and it's helping guys buy into, you know, what I'm preaching. And for him to be that guy, it's huge. If he didn't believe in me, then I know that it would be hard. So the first thing I did was build a relationship with them and make sure that those guys, the older guys, believed in me. And so that helps them. So, you know, when we talk about technique, he's bought in and he knows that, you know, what I've done before and what I'm showing them works. And that's what, you know, coaching is all about, is getting them to buy in. You know, a lot of coaches out there have many different techniques, have many different things, but at the end of the day, if you get your offensive line to believe in what you do and how you do it, you'll be successful. You know, if there was a coach out there that said, hey, just punch with one arm, and all the offensive line believed in it, then they would be the best one-arm punchers in the world. But, you know, I don't teach that, I teach two-arm. But just getting them to believe in that, and Menin's one of those guys that has, and he's been buying in.
Audrey Snyder, The Athletic.
Hey, Phil, thanks for your time this morning. You mentioned earlier kind of a sixth guy in Caden as that possibility, but the guy we saw last year was Dez Holmes and his ability to help out at both tackle spots. What have you been able to see from Dez so far, and what do you think is kind of necessary for him to take that next step?
Yeah, Dez, again, is one of those guys that's believing in, you know, the football IQ part, understanding the game of football. And you know, he, you know, the workouts that I saw, he was working really hard. He's driven. You know, he's a guy that I think can play. Again, I think he can play guard and he can play tackle. He could play both left and right, guard and tackle. So he's a guy that can play, you know, four positions, which I think is key in, you know, developing him and being able to have that depth. So, you know, he was a sixth guy last year, but you know, I feel like you need 10 guys to go into a game that are ready to play in all positions.
Next up is Nubias Wilbur, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Hey, Coach, how are you, man?
I'm good.
I feel you. What has C.J. Thorpe meant to not only the roster now, but at least throughout this time of getting guys acclimated and helping guys out with his experience?
Yeah, you know, he's another guy that's, you know, the good thing about this offensive line is you have experience. You know, you have a lot of guys that played, and a lot of guys that, you know, played some big time football. So that's really good. And then for him, he's a guy that also, you know, is buying into the technique. You know, he's, you know, a lot of, he's been kind of getting away with his athleticism. Help him because he's powerful in the weight room. Like, he's one of the strongest in the weight room. He's, you know, conditioning wise, he's always the guy that, you know, it does good in that part, like last station in mat drill or spring workouts, winter workouts. He's step. He has to get technically and fundamentally sound, which is huge, and he's buying into that.
Next up is Tyler Donahue, Lions 247.
Good morning, Phil. Good to hear from you. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Good morning. Thank you.
Getting into specific names, because I know you can't. You've enjoyed some recruiting success at the offensive line position of late. I'm just curious on your thoughts on how that is going so far, and some of the more highly ranked recruits on your board are on the offensive. Additionally, Tyler Bowen, how much of a boost is he in that process with his history at the position?
Yeah, you know, Tyler is, you know, he's awesome. He's helping me. You know, he's just, he's been here and he knows, you know, what we want. And he's kind of just, you know, my guy. I mean, he's helping me. We're both young. You know, he's actually younger than me, which is crazy. He's, I think he's 30 or 31, about to be 31. So he's, you know, he's a great guy just to being able to talk with about offensive line. And he's played it. He's, he, you know, I think, you know, he's definitely an offensive line guy in his background, but I know his goals at the end of the day want to be, you know, a big time coordinator. And, you know, he's just awesome. And, you know, recruiting is fun. You know, I'd be able to build relationships with really good football players and help them along the way. And, you know, I could see them, you know, there's a lot of great offensive lines out there, or linemen out there in this all these classes, coming young guys and being able to be in that is huge, and just building. One day.
Next up is Bob Flounders, Penn Live.
Hi, Phil. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Phil, two questions. I noticed you've been asked about does he kind of factor in your 2020 plans? He's a guy that's had to deal with, I know, a significant injury a couple years back. Where's he at, and what are your thoughts on Will?
Yeah, Will is awesome. He's a guy that will just send me clips of NFL clips, and I mean, he's always doing extra stuff. He showed me a picture of a punching bag he built in the backyard. Like, that's the mentality that, you know, I love. That's the mentality I want my offensive line. As you know, offensive season for him, this is the big year for him. I think he's taking it that way, and he wants to be, you know, all Big Ten, and he wants to be drafted. I mean, that's his mindset, and I think he has the ability to. He has great feet, and he just loves the game of football, and I think a lot of organizations will love that in him, because that's what you want. You don't want guys that, you know, have been getting through with their talent. You want guys that want to be great, and that pushes your offensive line, and that pushes your organization. So I'm excited about Will. He's a leader, you know, when we talk about the tackles, and, you know, a lot of guys, you know, believe in him. So it's big. And then Juice is doing awesome. He was working. He did everything this winter with me, and, you know, technique is getting better. He's starting to play in his legs again. And, you know, I feel like he's a guy that also can play, you know, all five. You know, going into the spring, we were going to put him at center, but he's also has athletic and feet to play, you know, tackle, and then he has the power in his legs to play guard. So he's a guy that will play all five, and keeping him healthy is my job, and I'm going to do everything I can to make that happen and get him fundamentally sound and technically sound, so he's, you know, he's not putting himself in any, you know, any harm.
Next up is Mike Gross in Lancaster. Whoa. Mike, you there? There you go.
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, we got you.
We can hear you.
Okay, yep. All right. You made a number of references so far to technique and guys building up their technique. Is there anything that you teach that is maybe in terms of technique that's going to be maybe different for these guys?
Yeah, a little bit. Just, you know, my mindset is, you know, in the run game, you play in your legs. You know, I do a little core mechanics, which basically I bring my hands slightly back on my first step, and I bring my hands with my second step. So we're always playing in our legs. You know, I always ask everyone, I mean, I can ask all you, do you squat more, you bench more? Most likely you're going to say you squat more, right? So as an offensive lineman, let's get them to play in their legs. Let's get them to play in their insteps of their feet, so they're always in maximum power. So being able to do that, to get them to feel that, to play in their legs, you know, takes a little bit of time. And then When we talk about pass pro, it's all about, staying. I'm a big two-hand punch guy. I want to be, violent with my hands. I want to get separation. There's a lot of different philosophies out there on punches and, one hand, outside hand. I'm good with that, but until we are great with two-hand punches, then we'll do all the other stuff. So that's something that, two-hand punches is a little bit different for them. But overall, they understand the, always being power, always being your legs and stuff like that. So it's been a little bit of adjustment.
Next up is Donnie Collins, Times Tribune.
Hey, Phil, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Anthony Wigan, a guy who redshirted last year. I know they really liked his potential at the junior college level. What have you seen from him early on, and how close is he to being one of the 10 guys you're looking for?
Yeah. He's definitely, right off the bat, I could tell he's naturally plays in his legs. He has great leg drive, great leg power. He's a guy that I think can have a very good role for us, and he's thinking that way. Like, he's doing extra meetings with Minute, and he kind of has that mindset that he wants to get on the field. He knows that, his journey has been different than a lot of other guys going to junior college, and sometimes I like that because that gives him drive, and that gives him, the mindset that he wants to get on that field. And he's been doing everything we ask him, and I can see him, being one of those guys that you guys are, we're playing someone, he's in, and there's no stopping us.
Next up is Joe Giuliano, Philadelphia Inquirer.
Good morning, Phil. Being from South Jersey, I'd like to ask you some bio information. Where did you grow up your whole life in Voorhees? Where did you go to high school? And what were your accolades during high school? And did you ever consider Penn State for college?
Yep. So my dad was in the Air Force. So I actually was born in Texas, but we ended up moving a lot till second grade. I moved to South Jersey. I actually moved to Voorhees, went to Crescent Elementary School. Then I went to middle school in South Jersey, and then I went to high school at Eastern High School, which is the same actually as Adam Terraferro. So, for me, actually when that happened, everything that happened, I was a freshman. So that kind of got my, also thinking about Penn State. And, we always looked at Adam. We actually read Adam's book as a senior. So that was something that's always been, and he's actually reached out to me, which was cool, and someone that I actually looked up to, and what he did and how he overcome it, kind of just made me think about it, and actually probably motivated me to drive and to overcome a lot of things that I had to overcome. So that was that. Accolades, I actually didn't get all South Jersey. I wasn't all state. We had a really good team. We actually won our Group 4 state championship at Eastern. It was the first one ever in 2004. So we won a state championship in football my senior year. And then, of course, my story is I wanted to go to Penn State. I actually came here actually with a broken foot. I had a broken foot. I came here as going into my senior year. And tried to come to camp. It was actually a Nike camp, and I didn't get offered. So the next day I had to put a boot on because I was actually supposed to be in a boot for the camp. But I told the doctor, no, I'm going to try to get an offer from Penn State. Probably didn't do too well because of the broken foot, but I ended up not getting an offer. And then ended up getting an offer late from Florida, and I went to Florida. So